here is a special announcement. Today is Tuesday, and not, as is announced in today's Sunday Telegraph, Friday. And now, a repeat of last Thursday's performance of Monday Night is Music Night.
Yes, we're back here after another session with the new music generator. Back here on Cambridge 105, community radio in your city, with Evening Under Lamplight. I'm Robert Louis Abrahamson with what I hope will be some interesting things for us all to attend to, and you, as you know, are invited to attend. Find out more at our page on cambridge105.co.uk. That's the station's website with all sorts of information there, and we have a page there too, and a link to the archives on Mixcloud. Now first, as has become a little routine or even ritual now, we'll get ourselves ready with Alec Guinness reading from T.S. Eliot's Four Quartets. Home is where one starts from.
Home is where one starts from. As we grow older, the world becomes stranger, the pattern more complicated of dead and living. Not the intense moment isolated with no before and after, but a lifetime burning in every moment, and not the lifetime of one man only, but of old stones that cannot be deciphered. There is a time for the evening under starlight, a time for the evening under lamplight, the evening with the photograph album. Love is most nearly itself when here and now cease to matter. Old men ought to be explorers. Here and there does not matter. We must be still and still moving into another intensity for a further union, a deeper communion through the dark cold and the empty desolation, the wave cry, the wind cry, the vast waters of the petrel and the porpoise. In my end is my beginning.
Old men must be explorers, he says. And though our community here under lamplight consists not entirely of old men, whatever might qualify one for that description, nevertheless, we're always trying to be explorers, looking at one or another photograph album and exploring what the words and music in it might have to say to us. And this evening, under lamplight, I thought we might turn to the page titled Do You Swear to Tell the Truth, the Whole Truth, and Nothing But the Truth? This is an oath that a witness must swear to before giving testimony in court. It's supposed to be a very solemn moment, but we'll attend to these words and explore their ramifications. We'll see what we find here. But all solemnity also needs its farcical, jokester counterpart, and before we begin, let's hear Curly Howard, one of the Three Stooges, try to make sense of this oath from the Three Stooges' 1936 film, Disorder in Court.
Raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth?
Huh?
Do you solemnly swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth?
Are you trying to give me the double talk?
Do you solemnly swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth?
Why don't you answer him?
He's talking pig Latin. I don't know what he's saying.
He's asking you if you swear...
No, but I know all the words.
He's asking you if you'll swear to tell the truth.
Truth is stranger than fiction, Judgy Wudgy.
Kindly address this court as your honor and take the oath. Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, all the truth, nothing but the truth?
Certainly. What have I got to lose?
Take the stand.
So there's Curly's response to the oath, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? It's double talk, he says, pig Latin, in other words, nonsense, especially because the court official speaks so fast that he turns the words into a meaningless succession of cliché sounds. Things are getting disorderly, but then Curly, who apparently knows only street language, confuses the sense of swearing an oath with swearing as bad language, and so when the exasperated judge asks, will you swear? Curly answers, no, but I know all the words. And for him, truth is only a word in the catchphrase, truth is stranger than fiction. And finally, realizing the unreality of this whole procedure, he has no problem with being agreeable. And in answer to, will you tell the truth, can quite easily reply, certainly. What do I got to lose? Indeed. It's all a game, isn't it? Yeah, okay, but what kind of game? That's the real question, isn't it? What do we expect when we ask someone to tell the truth? And how possible is it to tell someone else the truth? Or even to tell the truth ourselves with our enormous capacity for self-deception? Oops. Let's not get quite so heavy this early in the show. In fact, here's another one of our triptychs, three somewhat related songs to lighten things for a moment. Here are three songs sort of about telling the truth, or not. Now, before we move over to the first song, let's remember that in older usage, if not in modern parlance, the word story was often used as an indirect word for lie. Don't tell stories, young children would be lectured, meaning don't tell lies, speak the truth. Of course, this is related to the old idea that stories, that is, fiction, are lies. They're not literally true. We, sophisticated people that we know that there are ways of telling the truth that are not literally true. Think of myths, parables, that sort of thing. As well as any good piece of fiction where the characters and incidents may be made up, but they always remain true to human nature. But because telling a story could be equated with telling a lie, I think the following song can fit into our theme this evening. We'll hear it, and then I'll have a few things to say about it afterwards. Here's Frankie Lane and Jimmy Boyd with Tell Me a Story.
You said, you promised me, you said you would. You gotta give in, so I'll be good. Tell me a story, then I'll go to bed.
Oh, worry, worry, weary ends my day. Comes the time to go home without my raisin pay. Home by the fire where a man can just relax. Slippers there by the chair, not a worry, not a care. Along comes Junior, swinging his little axe.
Tell me a story, remember what you said. Tell me about the birds and bees, how do you make a chicken sneeze? Tell me a story, then I'll go to bed.
Came home so late one evening last July. Played a little poker, the time had passed me by. Shoes in my hand and my darling wife in bed. Up the stairs saying a prayer, then a voice comes through the air.
Hiya there, Daddy, remember what you said. Tell me a story, remember what you said. Tell me how your eye got black because the doorway hit you back. Tell me a story, then I'll go to bed.
Once upon a time, I remember long ago.
Don't go back in history, your memory's kind of slow.
Stop your noisy talking till I finish with my tale. Once upon...
Upon a what?
Upon your back you'll get a swat.
Tell me about the fish you caught that's bigger than a whale. Tell me a story, tell me a story, tell me a story. Remember what you said. You promised me, you said you would. You got to give in, so I'll be good.
Here's a tale you'll never forget. And now get up to bed.
Ah, come on, Daddy. Tell me a story.
Okay. Well, that'll be in your head for the next 3 days, won't it? That was Frankie Lane, singer of such songs as Mule Train, Rawhide, and Blazing Saddles, and 14-year-old Jimmy Boyd, best known for his 1952 hit I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus. And here they are, coming together in 1953 with Tell Me a Story. My parents must have bought this record for me, or maybe I heard it sometime on the radio, but I can just vaguely recall it as part of my childhood repertoire, a joke with my father when, after he'd read me a story in the armchair downstairs, he'd give me a mock potch and tuchus, a tap on the backside, and say, "Now get up to bed." Very funny, a bonding moment that still reverberates. But when I came across the song again a few years ago, I was shocked to see what was really going on there. First of all, Junior begs his father to tell him a story. The kid's wise before his years. He knows that the whole thing's a bribe just to keep him, just to get him to go to bed. Tell me a story. Remember what you said. You promised me. You said you would. You gotta give in so I'll be good. Tell me a story and then I'll go to bed. Who's bribing whom? Is it the father bribing the kid with a story so he'll go to bed? Or is it the kid bribing his father with the promise of going to bed so his father will read him a story? Is this a kid desperate for his father's attention, at least for the duration of a good night story? But the next verse is a little troublesome. The father's had a bad day back there in 1950s America and comes home weary and full of worries from the job where he has not received the pay rise he'd hoped for. Is he struggling to make ends meet? Whatever it is, he's come home defeated and just wants to relax in the comforts of home and nurse his wounds. But then along comes Junior swinging his little axe. That would be an odd phrase to explain to a non-English speaker, but it means something like mouthing off, hitting me with his demands. And what kind of story does Junior want? Tell me about the birds and bees. How do you make a chicken sneeze? I can recall that these were the images that most tickled me when I was young. But, well, here we are back in that other sense of story as a lie, or at least a tall tale. The Birds and Bees is a fiction designed to hide the truth of sex from little kids, and making chickens sneeze, well, look, I'm bluffing this one, but I think from far back in my vestigial cultural memory, I think there was some tall tale you tell to children about doing something silly to make a chicken sneeze, another non-truth. And one night, Daddy comes home late, having been out with the boys playing poker, and he sneaks upstairs, praying that he won't wake his wife, and suddenly the little brat yells out, "Hey there, Daddy, remember what you said?" Are we perhaps losing sympathy for the father? He'd said to the kid, "Now, you be a good boy, okay? I'm just going out to see my friends for a little bit, and when I come back, I'll tell you a story." Raising the kid's expectations, but not bothering to fulfill those expectations, serves him right. Well, now it seems that the stories Junior wants are not the ones from illustrated kids' books. He wants Daddy to tell me how your eye got black because the doorway hit your back. Now we're sure that Junior knows what's going on. He knows Daddy got a black eye because he was in a fight, but somehow he seems to enjoy stringing his father along, pretending that he believes that story about a door hitting him in the back, with perhaps the threat that he'll expose Daddy's lies if Daddy doesn't do what he wants him to do. The song is getting pretty nasty. And did my father really play it on the little record player for me? Did he ever attend to what it was saying? Daddy tries to avoid all this by going back to the traditional storyline. Once upon a time, I remember long ago, but the smart-ass kid wants none of that. He knows that memory lies. Daddy's getting angry. Stop your noisy talking until I finish with my tale. Once upon a... But the kid interrupts. Upon a what? And gets not a story, but a threat. Upon your back, you'll get a swat. Ha-ha, the inevitable spanking for the snotty kid. Daddy's power play. Then surely Junior's next request is a deliberate taunt. Tell me about the fish you caught that was bigger than a whale. I know you were lying when you told me that one, Daddy. And that's it. Here's a tale you won't forget, says Daddy, and smacks him on the tail. Ouch, my tail's all red. Nice puns there. Now get up to bed. But Junior knows that although his tail is smarting, he still has the upper hand and, presumably from upstairs in bed, calls out once more, Ah, come on, Daddy, tell me a story. And come on, his voice is so cute with his little lisp that who could resist him? And he knows it. So where's our sympathy now? With Daddy or Junior? Does it depend on what we think about hitting little children? And let's remember that this kid, say he's 5 years old in 1953, will grow up to be a teenager in the 60s, in full rebellion against his parents, long hair, smoking a joint, listening to Country Joe and the Fish or Frank Zappa in a room full of naked flesh with posters of Jimi Hendrix or Che Guevara, playing a different game, jiving to different stories, meaning something else by going up to bed. Yes? Have I gone too far with this? Look, all good discussion of literature or music should have as its end to make us want to experience the art again. Perhaps you want to hear this song again, and why not? Our time's our own here. So let's do the song once more, enjoying it in a deeper way, I hope.
Remember what you said. You promised me, you said you would. You gotta give in, so I'll be good. Tell me a story, then I'll go to bed.
Oh, worry, worry, weary ends my day. Comes the time to go home without my raise and pay. Home by the fire where a man can just relax. Slippers there by the chair, not a worry, not a care. Along comes Junior swinging his little axe.
Tell me a story, tell me a story, tell me a story, remember what you said. Tell me about the bird and bees, how do you make a chicken sneeze? Tell me a story, then I'll go to bed.
Came home so late one evening last July, played a little poker, the time had passed me by. Shoes in my hand and my darling wife in bed. Up the stairs saying a prayer, then a voice comes through the air.
Hiya there, Daddy, remember what you said. Tell me a story, tell me a story, tell me a story, remember what you said. Tell me how your eye got black because the doorway hit you back. Tell me a story, then I'll go to bed.
Once upon a time, I remember long ago.
Don't go back in history.
Stop your noisy talking till I finish with my tale. Once upon...
Upon a what?
Upon your back, you'll get a swat.
Tell me about the fish you caught that's bigger than a whale. Tell me a story, tell me a story, tell me a story, remember what you said. You promised me, you said you would. You got to give in, so I'll be good.
Here's a tale you'll never forget. And now get up to bed.
Ah, come on, Daddy. Tell me a story.
Okay. That guarantees it's going to go through your head for several days. Look, it's gone through mine for the past week. Let it go through yours, too. We'll share that together. Now, I said we were going to have a triptych, that is, three songs in a row, or sort of in a row, and you're probably waiting for the next song. And here it is, from Fraggle Rock, with a special salute to Julian, who was looking forward, at least so he said, to hearing what I was coming up with. Well, what I'm coming up with is the song Is It True? The song delivered by an old wizard when he shows up at Fraggle Rock. Too bad he's a fraud, a quack wizard, but that doesn't invalidate the song itself. The song gives us another angle in our quest for truth, that question of whether it is true what they say about a higher plane of being, something beyond just the material world in front of us. It's a kind of evangelical spiritual, I suppose, and like all Fraggle songs, it is much wittier and goes much more deeply than one would expect from a children's show. Here are the lyrics, and then we'll have the song itself for you to dance along with. There's a story going round, and it started long ago, and everyone keeps telling it in places high and low. And because my heart is weary, I really want to know, is it true what they say? Is it true? Is it true there is magic that we have never known? Is it true there are powers that we can call our own? Is it true there is someone whose wonders stand alone? Is it true what they say? Is it true? Is it true? Not because they told me so. Is it true? Not because the story's old. Is it true? Not until you really know. Not until you feel it grow. Now I see it with my eyes. Now I see the glory rise. Now I know the reason why. Is it true that the doubters say that they believe? Is it true that the skeptics finally receive? For a heart that is weary, it matters through and through. Is it true what they say? Is it true? Well, I know when I wander with an aching in my heart, we've been waiting round and hoping for the magic time to start. And now there's no more waiting. The news for me and you, 'cause it's true. Yes, it's true. Yes, it's true.
There's a story going round, and it started long ago, and everyone keeps telling it in places high and low. And because my heart is weary, I really want to know, is it true what they say? Is it true? Is it true there is magic that we have never known? Is it true there are powers that we can call our own? Is it true there is someone whose wonders stand alone? Is it true what they say?
Hallelujah! Did you catch those important lines about perceiving the truth? Not because they told me so, that is, not because some religious leader laid down the doctrine or some news media fed me the line, and not because the story's old, that is, not because everyone's believed it for centuries. No, it's not until I see it for myself or feel it within myself. Not just an emotional charge, of course, that's just sentimental evangelicalism, but some deep conviction, a scandal to those who want only truths that can be proved. Well, just to keep us from flying too high into the remote realms, here's a bit of nonsense from Walt Kelly's Songs of the Pogo called Truly True. a nice, peaceful, cheerful song, if a bit meaningless.
I dapped upon a dilly who would be my dolly dear. Oh, dilly, I would dally if you'd be but truly true. How silly, I'm a sally off to do my duty. I dapped upon a dilly who would be my dolly dear. Oh, dilly, I would dally if you'd be but truly true. How silly, I'm a sally off to do my duty do.
Well, if there are no true perceptions here, at least there is a truth about the sounds of the words, a truth about our ability to play around with them. And through the nonsense, there emerges, perhaps just barely, some sort of true vision, I guess. Gambling on the gumbo, with the gambits all in gear. I dapped upon a dilly who would be my dolly dear. Oh, dilly, I would dally if you'd be but truly true. How silly I must sally off to do my duty do. And we too must do our duty to duty do, duty do, and remind you here at the halfway point of the show that I am Robert Louis Abrahamson, and this is Evening Under Lamplight, and the medium is Cambridge 105.
When the day comes to an end, he invites you to attend Evening Under Lamplight. It's Cambridge 105. Community radio in your city.
But listen, I think this will be the last time we get to hear that station identification from Neil Henry. You may have heard already that Cambridge 105 will have a rebranding starting next week, and new tags will be required. I'm trying to get Neil Henry to show up sometime to give us something new. So let's have it one more time.
When the day comes to an end, he invites you to attend Evening Under Lamplight. It's Cambridge 105. Community radio in your city.
And so that's our triptych of what we might call children's songs about finding truth. Though, as we've seen, they're far more than just songs for children. Tell me a story. Is it true, and truly true? But while we're on the subject of children, I want to look for a few minutes at something interesting that my man Robert Louis Stevenson wrote about children and truth-telling. In his essay, Child's Play, he speaks about the way children live in a world of imagination, transforming everyday things into fantastic objects to suit their imaginary world. In the child's world of dim sensation, Stevenson says, speaking of boys primarily, since that's what he has most experience with, in the child's world of dim sensation, play is all in all. Making believe is the gist of his whole life, and he cannot so much as take a walk except in character. And even eating becomes a game. He tells us that When my cousin and I took our porridge of a morning, we had a device to enliven the course of the meal. He ate his with sugar and explained it to be a country continually buried under snow. I took mine with milk and explained it to be a country suffering gradual inundation. You can imagine us exchanging bulletins, how here was an island still unsubmerged, here a valley not yet covered with snow. What inventions were made, how his population lived in cabins on perches and travelled on stilts, and how mine was always in boats, how the interest grew furious as the last corner of safe ground was cut off on all sides and grew smaller every moment, and how, in fine, the food was of altogether secondary importance and might even have been nauseous, so long as we seasoned it with these dreams. And so children keep telling themselves stories, or lies, to accompany the events of their young lives. Stories that Stevenson recreates for us in his Child's Garden of Verses. Stories that are as true for the child, while the adults look on and know they are just stories, not really true. And thus the children and their parents live together in different worlds. And if the child does not conform to what the parents think is the truth, then the child gets punished. But once we understand the way a child's mind is always so caught up in the world of imagination, we have to see the situation differently. Whatever we are to expect at the hands of children, Stevenson says, it should not be any peddling exactitude about matters of fact. They walk in a vain show among mists and rainbows. They are passionate after dreams and unconcerned about realities. Speech is a difficult art, not wholly learned. And there is nothing in their own tastes or purposes to teach them what we mean by abstract truthfulness. You do not consider how little the child sees, or how swift he is to weave what he has seen into bewildering fiction, and that he cares no more for what you call truth than you for a gingerbread dragoon. And so Stevenson's conclusion? Leave them in their native cloudland where they figure so prettily, pretty like flowers and innocent like dogs. They will come out of their gardens soon enough and have to go into offices and the witness box, where, by the way, they'll have to swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Good luck. Spare them yet a while, O conscientious parent. Let them doze among their playthings yet a little, for who knows what a rough, warfaring existence lies before them in the future. This subject of punishing a child for not telling the truth was something that apparently really bothered Stevenson. To a friend whose child he was about to stand godfather to, he wrote, "Let me beg a special grace for this little person. Let me ask you not to expect from him a very rigid adherence to the truth, as we peddling elders understand it." This is a point on which I feel keenly that we go often wrong. I was myself repeatedly thrashed for lying when, heaven knows, I had no more design to lie than I had, or was capable of having, a design to tell the truth. I did but talk like a parrot. That was Aberlady Lynx, a tune composed by Robert Louis Stevenson, as poignant as his vision of the young child, head filled with imaginary stories, innocent yet of that rough, warfaring existence that lies ahead in the future, where imaginary truths have, for society's sake, have to be put aside for merely practical truths. But I'm going to continue with Stevenson, if I may, because he has something very important to say about telling the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. What he says, to be brief, is that it is impossible to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Double talk and pig Latin, as Curly would say. In fact, Stevenson said, it is easier, alas, to be inexact than to be exact in telling the truth. Well, to be fair, it depends on what kind of truth we're talking about. There is, on the one hand, truth of fact. Veracity to facts, in a loose, colloquial sense, Stevenson says, not to say that I have been in Malabar, when as a matter of fact I was never out of England, not to say that I have read Cervantes in the original, when as a matter of fact I know not one syllable of Spanish, this indeed is easy, and to the same degree unimportant in itself. Big deal. It's just a fact that can be easily verified by evidence. But the other kind of truth, truth of sentiment, as he calls it, is essential to life and much more difficult. Veracity to sentiment, he says, truth in a relation, truth to your own heart and your friends, never to feign or falsify emotion. This is the truth which makes love possible and mankind happy. See, it's hard to tell this kind of truth, partly because it's so hard for us even to discover this truth. What do I really think about this relationship? What are my true motives for having told my friend what I just said? We're so quick to deceive ourselves and, like children, tell ourselves pleasing stories rather than face the truth. But even if we perceive the truth, it's almost impossible to put that perception into words. The important things in life are far too complicated to define accurately in words. It is easier, alas, to be inexact. And here's Stevenson's amazing image illustrating the complexities of life and the difficulties of speaking accurately of it. Trying to speak accurately about our experience is as impossible as trying to mark out the boundaries of the shadow of a tree. The shadow of a great oak lies abroad upon the ground at noon, he proposes. Perfect, clear, and stable like the earth. But let a man set himself to mark out the boundary with cords and pegs, and were he never so nimble and never so exact, what with the multiplicity of the leaves and the progression of the shadow as it flees before the travelling sun, long ere he has made the circuit, the whole figure will have changed. Life may be compared not to a single tree, but to a great and complicated forest. Circumstances more swiftly changing than a shadow. Language much more inexact than the tools of a surveyor. From day to day the trees fall and are renewed. The very essences are fleeting as we look, and the whole world of leaves is swinging tempest-tossed among the winds of time. Look now for your shadows. Yes, you see, try to define your truths now.
Oh,
John Lennon says he can wait forever. He's got time. But wait all you want, John. You'll never be able to tell her. It's not you who's hung up. It's the whole complex world that's just impossible to pin down. And so what do? Just give up trying to tell the truth? No, we do what we can do, and that is to tell the truth as far as we perceive it, knowing that it is incomplete, and wrestling with language as best we can to convey what we perceive, telling all the truth we know, even if it means, as Emily Dickinson says, telling it slant, indirectly, through metaphor, tone of voice, suggestion. And when Stevenson attends to this aspect of truth-telling, he gets to a place that is of crucial importance for us today, true versus fake news. He was as concerned in 1881 as we are today with fake news. In a time when most people read little more than the newspapers, today, of course, we'd want to speak of the tabloids, cable news, Facebook, etc., etc., most people gain most of their education from these media. He cites the American and French press, which produce writing that is easy to read, which makes it all the more dangerous, containing salacious and ungenerous treatment of issues, providing distorting sound bites, or as Stevenson puts it, they supply some pungency for dull people to quote. The sneering, the selfish, the cowardly are scattered in broad sheets on every table, while the good writing, harder to read after all, just sits on the shelf. All this increases the general cynicism. We know the popular press is lying, and all we do is smile as over a good joke. Lying so open is scarce lying, he says, but... Get this, but one of the things that we profess to teach our young is a respect for truth. And I cannot think we will ever succeed in teaching respect for truth as long as some of us practice and the rest openly approve of public falsehood. What's to be done? It goes without saying that we should do all we possibly can to present the facts as clearly and exactly as we have perceived them. Nothing but the truth. And we must not suppress any facts, even if it seems kinder to ignore them. In one word, Stevenson says, it must always be foul to tell what is false, and it can never be safe to suppress what is true. The very fact that you omit may be the fact which somebody was wanting. Every fact is a part of that great puzzle we must set together. In other words, even if we can't trace the shadow of that great oak tree, even tracing the small part of it that we can manage is conveying some sort of truth and may, who knows, be useful to someone. Who are we to decide? And that's why it's so crucial for us to express as exactly as we possibly can that part of the general truth we can perceive, even knowing that it is only a small part of the truth. We're all working together, or should be working together, to understand as clearly as we can this great puzzle of a world we find ourselves in. So we're to tell the whole truth, or at least all the facts at our command. But there's more to the truth than just the facts. There's what Stevenson calls the spirit or point of view with which we approach the facts and shape our presentation of the facts. If we do not approach the facts with an open and humble mind, we will be false to the truth. You still with us? Here's Stevenson again. Any writer who puts himself before the public must see that his own mind is kept supple, charitable, and bright. Everything but prejudice should find a voice through him. He should see the good in all things. Where he has even a fear that he does not wholly understand, there he should be wholly silent, and he should recognize from the first that he has only one tool in his workshop, and that tool is sympathy. sympathy. That is, trying to get as close as possible to what we're looking at with an open mind, ready to see what's good and understand all sides. This is explained in the phrase we've just heard. We have to be supple, charitable, and bright. Here's how we get to the truth. Our imagination is supple, flexible enough so it can look at an issue or a fact from several different points of view, not just looking to promote our own view on the subject. And we must be charitable, working hard to see the best in the subject. For after all, what's the point of merely pointing out the bad side of things? That doesn't mean we have to blindly overlook the corruption of a company director or the oppression and cruelty of a politician. But if we just look at the evil, we're giving only one side of the issue, and that's never going to be the whole truth. Charity may, in such cases, require us to expose not only the harm being done, but also the people who are being harmed, so that we, the readers, are not just moved to condemn the iniquity, but are moved to do something about it. And the third of those words, bright, here's the skill of the writer. It's no good presenting a boring, bloodless account of the facts. You have to present them in a vivid way so they catch our imagination and remain alive and memorable to us. Maybe you even have to tell them as a story. Well, as I've been talking about this, no doubt you've been thinking about all the fine reporting available to thinking people today, where the truth is fairly reasonably presented. But you've also been thinking about the lies and fabrications and biased treatments that, as in Stevenson's time, seem to be what influences most people. Well, that's all I can offer you. Just some ideas to attend to and some words to speak about this with to help you see what's going on a little more supply, charitably, and brightly. And what's happened to our opening oath to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Has it become more meaningful or just more deeply double talk and pig Latin?
Raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Huh?
Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Are you trying to give me the double talk?
Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Why don't you answer him?
He's talking pig Latin. I don't know what he's saying.
He's asking you if you swear...
No, but I know all the words.
He's asking you if you'll swear to tell the truth.
Truth is stranger than fiction, Judgy Wudgy.
Kindly address this court as your honor and take the oath.
Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Certainly. What have I got to lose?
Take the stand.
Okay, we've got time for a little more. Here's an odd Dylan song about a visit to Speaker's Corner in Hyde Park, where people shout out their points of view. We come across someone ranting against the evil influence of television and the TV god. How will that shape up as news? Attend to TV Talking Song from the obscure 1990 album Under the Red Sky.
One time in London, I'd gone off a walk past a place called Hyde Park, where people talk about all kinds of different gods. They have their point of view to anyone passing by, that's who they're talking to. There was someone on the platform talking to the folks about the TV god and all the pain that it invokes. Too bright a light, he said, for anybody's eyes. If you've never seen one, it's a blessing in disguise. I'm moving closer, got above my toes. Two men in front of me were coming to blows. A man was saying something about children when they're young being sacrificed there while lullabies are being sung. The news of the day is on all the time. All the latest gossip, all the latest rhyme. Your mind is your temper, keep it beautiful and free. Don't let an egg get laid in there by something.
you can't see. Pray for peace, he said, you could feel it in the crowd. My thoughts began to wander, but his voice was ringing loud. It will destroy your family, your happy home is gone. No one can protect you from it once you've done it all. It will lead you into some strange pursuits, lead you to the land of forbidden fruits. It'll scramble up your head and drag your brain about. Sometimes you gotta do like Elvis did and shoot the damn thing out. It's all been designed, he said, to make you lose your mind. And when you go back to find it, there's nothing there to find. Every time you look at it, your situation's worse. You feel it grabbing out for you, standing by the nerves. The crowd begun to riot and they grabbed hold of the man that was pushing, there was shoving, and everybody ran. TV crew was out of film, it they jumped right over me. Later on that evening, I watched it on TV.
Every time you look at it, your situation's worse. You feel it grabbing out for you. Send for the nurse. Well, that doesn't sound very charitable, but let's hope when the facts of the event got translated into television coverage that the coverage was at least bright, if not supple and charitable. Well, now it's time to put away the picture album. What a varied lot of pictures we've been looking at this evening under lamplight, the evening with the photograph album. I'm Robert Louis Abrahamson, and this has been Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105. And one last time.
When the day comes to an end, he invites you to attend Evening Under Lamplight. It's Cambridge 105. Community radio in your city.
Thank you again. You can reach me at lamplight@cambridge105.co.uk and come to us at the cambridge105.co.uk website and find out everything. And so I've told you a story or a few stories, and that's no lie. And as Daddy says, now get up to bed. And to help you up to bed, nice and gentle, here's my classmate, Mark Copeland, with a piece called Both And. The essence of truth being that both this and that can both be true. Or as Stevenson put it in a fable, how if this be the truth, that all are a little true? That is, both and. Good night.